back, hour number three. Got headlines up there, a lot of news stories, another very heavy news day, a lot of things worth your attention if you're following along and care to follow along. We've got it all up there, and I want to thank my staff, we'll call them, my friends who send key stories in every day, and they work very hard to make sure I get to choose from the very best for all of you people. All of us. And I think we have a great representation. And these are some very, very heroic people who support the effort here and make it easier for me. Otherwise, I'd have to do even more work than I do. So they send wonderful material. A lot of it up there. Apparently, we'll hear from Henry in just a minute. Trump had another... he wasn't making a formal briefing, but... he still made a whole bunch of new, false, and misleading statements. It's just, how can you tell when he's lying? When he's talking. That's how you can tell. We have another report out of CNN. It looks like Dr. Faustus again. He's 2 more years of pandemic misery. Remember what he was quoted as saying? This is pandemic one in a memo, and he said all who live through this first pandemic, as if there are going to be others, will have lived through basically hell on earth, something like that. I can't remember the exact verbiage, but the story from CNN, the new coronavirus is likely to keep spreading for at least another 18 months to 2 years, until 60 to 70% of the population has been infected. This is allegedly from a team of long-standing pandemic experts who predicted that in a report released today. They recommended that the U.S. prepare for a worst-case scenario that includes a second big wave of coronavirus infections in the fall and winter, which is what Henry has been saying for a long time on this program. Even in a best-case scenario, people will continue to die from the virus they predicted. Well, okay, obviously, we get it. It's going to happen. It will burn its way through the majority of the population until herd immunity is somehow conferred upon us by having survived the virus. Look at Sweden as a perfect example. No lockdowns, about 2,100 dead so far. 1,000 of those, at least, are in extended care facilities. That's the same thing we're having here, a pandemic raging through extended care facilities for old and elderly Americans. Mike Osterholm, one of the members of this committee, said, this thing's not going to stop until it infects 60 to 70% of the people. The idea that this is going to be done soon defies microbiology. University of Minnesota Center for Infectious Disease Research. He has been writing about the risk of pandemics for 20 years and has advised several presidents on the issue, none of whom have made adequate or reasonable preparations. Henry Nyman, PhD, virologist, world-renowned, respected, known all over the planet, worked with SARS 17, 18 years ago, has been on this program for that long at least, and has been with me every night since our first formal broadcast on this pandemic was January the 8th, and we've been at it Monday through Friday since shortly thereafter. Henry, welcome back. How are you today?
Well, it's... good to be back, and been pretty busy again today, tabulating the numbers for the various states just to get an idea on what's going on as far as the rate of deaths as well as the rate of newly reported cases. And it kind of supports what, in general, the scientific community says, that the only ones that don't believe that the virus will come back in the fall are the ones that believe it will not leave before the fall. So the fact that there's going to be a major outbreak in the fall is pretty much unanimous. And there's like one person that doesn't seem to believe that, but he is far from being a scientist and far from having any notion of what pandemics are about or how they're caused, how they're spread, and all he knows is he had nothing to do with it, or at least so he
says.
That's
the man.
But
yeah.
But in any event, the numbers, I kind of just put together today and taking a look at the last several days, and they pretty much throw cold water on these various predictions, including the president, as to how many people are going to die in before the fall, between when it started and August, really. And there's updated projections that it was going to be 60,000, then it was going to be 67,000, then it was going to be 74,000. And those, I don't know where they're coming up with those numbers, but they're not talking about the United States. Maybe they got some other country they're talking about, but U.S. is number one, will stay number one, and will get up to that 74,000 dead by next week, which is May. It's not August. So I don't know. They need a calendar check. They're kind of 3 months off, and it's hard to be 3 months off when you made the predictions a week ago. But
we might want to drop in here, Henry, your statements about a seasonal decline, which many people were predicting. Well, it's going to go away in May, June, July, and August. The heat is going to drive it away and blah, blah, blah.
Hey, we've only got 45 minutes and it's going to be gone. April will be over. so we're just about there. But famous last words that it'll just disappear in April. Just to give you an idea on how this disappearing act works for this virus, that at the beginning of April, in the U.S., there were about 4,700 dead. And today...
At the beginning of this month, there were 4,700 dead. 30 days ago.
In the U.S., correct.
In the U.S.
30 days ago. And now, 30 days later, all of which encompasses the month of April, the disappearing act, is supposed to just magically disappear. There are now almost 64,000 deaths. So that means that in the month of April, there were 60,000 Americans that died. And if you do the math, not real hard, you got 60,000 in 30 days, that's 2,000 a day. And it's higher than 2,000 a day now. So it's not like it disappeared in April.
Mm-hmm.
It's today, just for the 50 states, this doesn't count. There's other Americans dying. There's and getting infected. There's the military, which are not included in the states total. And there's Theodore Roosevelt that's got hundreds, if not 1,000 by now, sailors that are positive, and at least one has died. And then I think there's the SS Kidd, and it's another Navy ship, U.S., that also has an outbreak. I don't know exactly what the number is there.
Almost 1,000 on the Roosevelt, you said.
Right.
Almost 1,000.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I'm not sure. I'm virtually positive that the cases in the VA hospitals throughout the country are not reported to the individual states. And so those are not included in the state's numbers. And then, various other Americans that might have been infected overseas and came back to the U.S. Are not included either. So the numbers that I had are just the 50 reports, or 51 with the District of Columbia. Those 51 reports by the U.S. states that come out every day they update their website. Each state has its own website for the Department of Health or, you know, some similar agency. And they all prominently display a COVID page, or pages usually, and they're on the front, so it's really easy to find them. I've got all the states listed, and they all have the link to their COVID tallies, and I update that each day. And so today, as far as the deaths are concerned, there were 2,136 today. There were 2,421 yesterday. There were 2,256 the day before. And you can kind of see the pattern. They're all above 2,000, and usually they go down a little bit on the weekend. But they've been at this rate of 2,000 now for
a month,
the last couple of weeks, and on average they've been at 2,000 a day for the entire month. And like I said, the deaths are a trailing indicator. The leading indicator are how many new cases are reported each day. And today there were 29,378. Yesterday there were 26,447. The day before there were 23,872.
It's an increase of 6,000 in two days.
Right. So if they're basically in the 20-something thousand each day, and there were a few days last week that were actually up to 30,000, if they're going 25 to 30,000 a day with a little bit of a dip over the weekend, then those patients are going to die in the next month. They're going to die in the month of May. So May is already loaded up. You know, it's already loaded up with confirmed cases that have already been reported by the
state. Now, Henry doesn't mean they're all going to die. He's meaning that that number of infections will play out over the next 4 weeks in most cases. And whatever the case fatality rate is going to register on that number.
Right. And so that'll be 2,000 a day. They're going to continue at 2,000 a day. They're already in the hospital. They just haven't died yet. But they've already been diagnosed. This isn't like all of a sudden the numbers are going to go up, the numbers are going to go down. They've already been PCR confirmed. They're already in the hospital. And a percentage of them are going to die. There's nothing going to change in the month of May that all of a sudden all of these cases that have already been hospitalized are going to suddenly recover and go home.
It's a fait accompli. It's a done deal. It's already cast.
The
future is right there in front of us. Okay.
Right. The ones that are dying today, the 2,000 that are dying each day, are cases that were diagnosed in late March, early April. I mean, that's when they were identified, and then they go to the hospital, and then eventually they go, need oxygen, and many end up on ventilators, and many of those do not make it out of the hospital alive. And that's just the sequence of events. And so so how these guys can be making these projections saying it's going to be 60,000 deaths when it's already 63,000. Or how Trump can say, well, it's going to be 50 to 60 when there's 40-something thousand last week. Or how he can change it to 50 to 60 to 70,000 when it's already 63,000. And it's going to be 70,000 in the middle of next week. Or the other guys who are doing longer term, you know, using a computer to come up with this model. They say, oh, it's going to be 67,000 dead. Oh, no, it's going to be 74,000 dead. And there'll be 74,000 dead next week. They say there's going to be 74,000 dead by August. So for them to be right, it's got to abruptly end next week. After next week, zero deaths, and then they'll have it. Yeah.
Literally has to pause.
And so these 20-some-odd thousand that have already been identified and are in the hospital are going to have a miraculous recovery, which is in line with Trump. He said it was going to miraculously disappear. And apparently all these people that are infected with the virus and in the hospital are going to miraculously recover because it's not April. You know, April is gone. How can they die from an invisible virus? Although that is how Trump refers to it. It's just this invisible. You know, he's never seen an electron microscope. So they're invisible, even though their pictures are all over all the websites. You got the little ball with the spikes. That's the virus. That's what it's a picture of.
Anybody you need to write to Donald and tell him.
Has vision can see them. They're all over the internet. So in any event, it's pretty clear that the virus is not going away. There's no evidence to date that there's any major decline. And it was, I guess yesterday I kind of stumbled onto a parallel universe. Cuomo, you know, basically gives his update each day and he usually leads it off with the deaths in New York each day.
Governor Cuomo, what a guy. And
it comes out well in advance of the actual website getting updated or the numbers go updated. So I kind of watched that to get a heads up as to how many deaths happened in New York. And New York has been kind of the epicenter. There've been more cases in New York. And so yesterday I went on Twitter and did a search on a New York death to find out, what the total was, because it seemed that they kind of joined the press conference a minute or two late, and it sounded like he had already given the number for yesterday. And since I didn't know what the number was, I had to just, you know, search New York death. And that definitely took me to another universe. And in this other universe, this is all kind of blown out of proportion, and it's really just the flu, and it's got a lower fatality rate than the flu, and they're just, you know, making up these numbers, and most of the cases are in New York, and that they count every death in New York is a COVID death, and they count deaths that aren't lab confirmed as COVID deaths. And this is all, you know, a plot to defeat Donald Trump. And, you know, there's nothing to worry about.
It's all being orchestrated to defeat Donald Trump.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Henry, pull back from the phone just a little bit. You're a little too close. Just pull back.
Okay. This better?
Yeah.
In any event, they're kind of in denial, and apparently there's a couple of physicians that are kind of using some testing of some of their patients. I'm not sure what kind of physicians they are, but they're in Bakersfield, I guess, in California, and they got the antibody test, and just to give a little background on the antibody tests, there was, you know, complaints that some of these tests were not being made available that quickly. And so the FDA kind of gave a provisional kind of approval for antibody tests to find out antibody levels.
Do we like the antibody test? Tell us more.
Well, the antibody test can provide useful information, and the antibody test can provide some serious misinformation. And the reason is that unlike a PCR test, the PCR test can be very specific because the whoever makes the test chooses the primers, and the primers are chosen from existing sequence data, and so they can take specific regions that are unique to the SARS-CoV-2, And so they can take a region that's not really going to match other coronaviruses. And then the way a PCR test works is you take a primer at one position, and then you take another primer at a little bit further away, like 300 nucleotides away, and then the polymerase kind of fills in the gap. It kind of fills in the space between these two, and that's what gets amplified, and that's what gives us the signal. And then it can be checked further. You can actually sequence the insert. You can sequence the region in between, and that is using the virus as a template. So you can look at that sequence and confirm that this is the SARS-CoV-2 that was copied, and that's where the signal came from. And they can actually use that to sequence the full 30,000 nucleotides, so they can get a full sequence doing the same thing. And so that's a very specific assay. So if they're using, and they use more than one region, so they take a couple different locations that are very specific for SARS-CoV-2, and then they get signals at these couple positions to indicate that that's exactly what they're measuring. So if they get a positive, it's only SARS-CoV-2 coronaviruses. Not the flu, which is not at all related. It's not even the same
classifications.
Totally different. And that's very different for the antibody test, because the antibody test is looking at antibodies in whoever's being tested. And antibodies aren't quite that precise. You know, some of the antibodies kind of zero in on a specific region of the molecule, and others kind of cross react and kind of pick up a region that might be a little bit more conserved. And then the antibody may not even have a linear domain. It might rely upon the 3D structure. So it'll take a little piece of the protein from one portion, a little piece from another portion, a little piece from another portion. And therefore, it might cross-react. So if you have another coronavirus that's structurally similar and has these little areas that overlap, the antibody against the SARS-CoV-2 might recognize another coronavirus. And just to give an idea, before the original, you know, the SARS of 17 years ago, the SARS-CoV, that was identified as a novel coronavirus, there were two other coronaviruses that were well known to be circulating in humans. One was 229E, the other one was OCK 49 or something along those, or 43, I think. And those two viruses are cold viruses. They really produce relatively mild disease, and they're kind of, instead of a beta coronavirus, they're alpha coronaviruses. But in any event, they're distinct from the novel coronavirus, or novel SARS, or the current one, SARS-CoV-2. And the interest in the original SARS led researchers to basically take a conserved region and as a pan coronavirus and look for the original SARS coronavirus. What was its natural host? It was identified in civet cats, but if they looked at civet cats in the wild, they couldn't find the virus, and it looked like, you know, that was kind of a intermediate host. So it was in these civet cats, which were raised on farms and then sold in these wet markets, and they would infect other animals in the wet market. And that's where the virus was, next to people. That's why they were intermediate hosts. So people were getting infected from these animals in the wet market, but they weren't really the natural host. And so they ended up finding the virus in bats, and then they found that bats harbor a lot of different coronaviruses, and they actually came up with two additional ones that were found in humans. One was found in the Netherlands, so it was named NL63. The other one's in Hong Kong, so it was named HKU for Hong Kong University number one. And they were found in humans. So there were really four different coronaviruses that are known to be in humans that produce mild disease. But if you're doing a test for SARS antibodies, some of the tests are going to pick up antibodies to these other coronaviruses. So if you were infected with one of these coronaviruses when you were growing up as a child, or when you had one more recently and it was just kind of a flu, but you made antibodies, and then you did this test to see if you had antibodies to SARS-CoV-2, you could potentially pick up these other antibodies that were made against other coronaviruses.
So the test is not an exact lock.
It's not necessarily that specific, right? And the FDA has some additional testing that they can do, so that they say, well, here's your test. Is this sample positive for SARS-CoV-2 or negative? And they can give them a sample that's got one of these other coronaviruses, and they can see how the test performs. Is it specific for SARS-CoV-2, or does it pick up these other coronaviruses, and what kind of levels does it give for the other ones being present? And so before they go and they say, yes, this is a good antibody test for SARS-CoV-2, it doesn't cross-react, they have to kind of show the data for that. And a lot of these tests haven't gotten that far. They say, well, it works against SARS-CoV-2, and they say, well, how well does it work against NL63 or OCK43? And as a result, a lot of the tests do cross-react. And so if you're relying upon that to see if you've been infected with SARS-CoV-2 and it gives you a positive, that may or may not indicate you've been infected. It may just indicate you've been infected with a coronavirus at an earlier date. And if you recall, some of the initial testing was being done, some of the countries didn't have the new PCR test yet. And so they kind of substituted for a pan coronavirus PCR test, which took one of these conserved regions. And they started coming up with positives, and they got a lot of positives in children. And children usually aren't that susceptible to this virus. And the prediction was, well, if they send this out to a lab that's got a specific test, they're going to say it's a false positive because all they did is detect this other cold virus, this benign cold virus, and they weren't really identifying SARS-CoV-2. So these physicians in California, it's not clear what they're using, but, they're getting these positives, and they're saying, oh, the virus is widespread, and it's at a high population, and therefore, if you get infected with this virus, you've got a lower risk than the flu of getting serious disease, because we found this antibodies in all of these patients, and they're all asymptomatic. They don't have any symptoms. They don't have any evidence that they've got the virus other than they've got these antibodies, which indicated they had the virus. So they're using this data to say that the SARS CoV-2 is widespread and it's asymptomatic. These cases are asymptomatic and the virus is everywhere. And that this is just a very, very, very small percentage of people infected with this virus have symptoms or have serious illness. And it's less dangerous than the flu. And the problem with that whole argument is, number one, it's not clear how specific their assay is. Number two, it's not clear exactly who their patients are and how representative their patients are for the general population. And number three, they have no idea of how many people with the flu would be positive on a flu test, even though they were asymptomatic, because there aren't, testing isn't being done for asymptomatic flu cases because they're asymptomatic. They're not going to the doctor. They don't have any symptoms. And flu cases that are very mild also don't go to the doctor. So the flu data generally comes from these surveillance labs. So they say there's X number of flu cases, and then there's X number of cases that have serious illness and go to the hospital and end up dying. But their denominator is cases that are relatively advanced. At a minimum, they have influenza-like illness because they keep track of that also. But people that have a very mild case don't get tested, so they're not included in how many flu cases there are in the United States. And those that are asymptomatic don't get tested. So the number they're using for flu is a number of people that are symptomatic and go to the doctor and get tested. And the denominator they're using in their study are people that may not even been infected with this virus at all, but they're positive for antibodies, which are probably not very specific. And they're using, so they're doing apples to oranges. They're comparing how many people get sick for flu that have at least a serious enough illness to go to the doctor versus people that show up at their clinic for something else, and they happen to use this antibody test. So they're part of the problem by indicating that, oh, the virus is everywhere when it's probably just their assay.
Well, okay.
And that the incidence is way lower than is being reported because they're comparing apples to oranges.
The only thing I want to get away from this, we've got so much other to cover here, but that's very helpful. Santa Clara County indicated that their testing was showing actually a deficit to the extent of 80 times fewer people who were actually infected. That was their projection in Santa Clara County. 80 times more people than they had identified as being infected with coronavirus. And the same kind of thing is coming back from other locations. The point is, I think we got to go back to what you said at least a month ago. Maybe 2.5 months ago. We said it quite clearly here with Henry. He said the virus is all over the country.
Right.
We don't have any idea how many people are infected. Right.
Well, we have an idea.
That's what
the better antibody tests are saying. So in Santa Clara County, they're saying about 4% of the population has been infected with this virus, with a good antibody
300% test. More than they've guessed so far. That's a lot.
Right.
1%, less than 1% now. Now you're saying 4%.
But, Jeff, they said it was 4%. I mean, I read 4% of the people that they tested were positive for the virus. And most of them are asymptomatic.
Right.
And so the point is that there's two different questions here. One is, if you get the virus and you've got symptoms and you are sick enough to go to the hospital, in which case you're probably going to develop pneumonia, that how many of those people end up dying? And the answer is, if you get pneumonia and you've got this virus,
It's
10 to 15%.
Flu,
if you get the flu and you get pneumonia, it's nowhere near 10 or 15% die. So if you do an apples to apples comparison,
correct,
then you see that this is far more deadly than the flu is.
And then
if you take this other number, saying, well, if you get the virus, but you get so little of the virus that you don't show symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And you're positive on a, in many cases, you're not even positive on a PCR test. You're only positive on an antibody test that shows that you had enough virus that you had an immune response, but you had so little of the virus that you didn't develop any symptom and you didn't know you were sick. And they're saying, you know what? If you get this virus and you don't have any symptoms and you don't know you're sick, you're not going to die. And it's an irrelevant number for a case fatality rate because you're taking a population that gets a little bit of virus and they mount an immune response and they don't get enough virus to even pick up on a PCR test. And in other cases, they do have enough virus to pick up on a PCR test, but they still don't have enough virus to transmit. And then you've got the next level. Well, they pick it up on a PCR test. You're asymptomatic, but you do have enough virus. So coming up with how many people have the virus, but they don't have enough to give them symptoms doesn't really tell you how dangerous this virus is, because there are literally millions of people in that category. So there are millions of people that have been infected by the virus. They got a little bit of virus. They made a little bit of antibody. In all likelihood, they don't have enough antibody to protect themselves against a higher level of virus. And they don't have enough virus to even see a doctor. So that they're in this group of kind of, well, there's some virus floating around and some people are getting infected, but you can do this in the lab. You can go and take just about any virus. And if you put in a little bit, the person doesn't show any symptoms. And if you put in a little bit more, they show symptoms, but they're not really contagious. And then if you put a little bit more, they are contagious and they've got a little bit of symptoms. And then if you put in a little bit more, they've got severe symptoms. And then if you put in a little bit more, they die. So you can take the same virus. You can take the same virus and go from a dead animal at one concentration, zero symptoms and not even detectable at a lower concentration. And the question that you have for this virus that we're talking about is not, can you get a little bit of virus, make a little bit of antibody, neither of which are going to have any future consequences. You're not going to get sick, you're not going to die, and you're not going to have enough antibody to prevent you from getting infected again by the virus. So it's a non-event from a medical standpoint. It's a non-event for anything other than being able to say, oh, I was infected by the virus, I didn't know it, but here, I've got an antibody test that says I made some antibodies. And did you make enough antibodies so you're not going to get infected again? I have no idea. I mean, I actually got the results for, you know, I told you that my wife had
relatives. You got the results of your test?
No, not, well, yeah, I got mine. I was negative. Okay. So I was negative, but it was a self-administered swab of the nose, which doesn't go back to your brain. You know, it was just
Were those swabs going all the way back to the front of your brain through your nose?
That's what a normal nasopharyngeal swab is.
Wow.
A normal nasopharyngeal swab, if you go into the doctor's office and a doctor administers the test, I mean, Trump talked about it a lot. He didn't talk about anything getting to his brain because nobody would believe that. But he did talk about how uncomfortable it was. And And it is. It is. It feels like it's going up into your brain. It's very uncomfortable. It's done by a doctor, and that's how a normal nasal pharyngeal swab.
I see.
The one I had is self-administered. So you go and you drive up. They give you the swab in the package. You open the package in your car. They tell
really?
You to go halfway up your one side, one nasal, and then do the other nasal, and then
so the attendant didn't reach over and do your nose. You did your own nose. I didn't know. I thought they all administered the swab. An attendant.
That's the more recent test. The more recent test is you do your own swabbing. I mean, they are literally 6 feet away. They have a 6 foot long table. And they put the little basket at the end of the table, and then they go down to the other end of the table and push the table up to your car, tell you to then roll down your window, reach out, take the basket, which they've already wiped down with alcohol before they go to the next person. And you take out the swab, you open it, they have you swirl it around a couple times in one nostril and hold it there for 15 right. seconds. They count the 15 seconds for you. And then they tell you to take it out and put it on the other side and do the same thing. And then you put it into the tube with the transport fluid in it, and then you break off the end of it, and then you screw on the cap. And then you put the closed tube back in the basket, and then they go and they pull the table away from your car, and they take it out. So they don't have to basically put on new PPEs for every case that they don't handle they don't do the swabbing. All they do is they just take all the right. tube and put it back okay. in. And so it's not going to be as sensitive as the one that goes up to the back of your nose.
We only have six minutes left.
Okay. The results I saw was an antibody test. It was an Abbott antibody test. It was for a relative who I told you ended up going into the hospital, and they never actually tested him, but his... Mm-hmm. His wife and daughter both were tested. They were both positive, and they were all in the same household. And he definitely had symptoms, and he definitely had chest x-ray. But anyway, he took the antibody test. He sent me the results for interpretation. The antibody test says he took IgG, he took IgM. He was positive for both. It was by Abbott. They said that it wasn't necessarily approved yet by the FDA, although it was unlikely to cross-react to other coronaviruses, and it just says positive. It doesn't give a titer. It doesn't say how much you have, and you have no idea if the level that you had is sufficient to prevent you from getting infected subsequently, okay. because you don't even know how much you have. But that's the type of commercial test that's available today, and that's the type of result that these California doctors who says there's all this virus out there, and the virus is nothing to worry about because they're doing this apples to oranges.
Well, nothing could be further from the truth. We've got a few minutes. I've got to get to a couple things here. One is President Kushner. President Kushner told us that much of the country will be back to normal in 4 weeks in June from now. Now, what Henry did earlier was lay out the entire month already. It's already in the books. We've got 20, how many thousand cases for May that have been
60,000 for the month, 64,000 total. Yes, yes.
All right, how many cases for May? How many cases coming up for May that were put in the books in April? How many cases in April?
Oh, there's 25,000 a day.
25. All right, so here's the point.
Per
25,000 per day. 25,000 per day. already in the oven for the month of May. Understand, this will last 4 weeks in most cases, maybe longer. So May is already a foregone conclusion, approximately how many are going to die in May. But President Kushner is telling us everything will be fine and by June. He said, and I'll quote, I think you'll see by June that a lot of the... Go ahead.
Right. 2,000 a day is another 60,000 deaths. So there's going to be like 120,000 deaths by the end of next month.
And Jerry says, I think you'll see by June that a lot of the country should be back to normal. And the hope is by July, the country's really looking good and rocking again, he said. Rocking again by July. These people are living in another world.
He's already planning rallies. He's already talking about rallies, and he's already talking about, they can't do this distancing kind of stuff. You know, that, quote, unquote, won't look good. That if they're sitting in every 6 feet
or
something.
I have never in my life seen anyone to come close to this narcissistic moron in my, I've never seen anything like it, ever.
So he says it won't look good, so he's going to have them at the rallies, fully packed in, and he's going to be running around.
This is almost like ritualistic genocide, Henry. Ritualistic genocide.
Right, only as adoring fans. I mean, he's literally leading them to the slaughter.
It's Jonestown.
Come here.
It's
Trumptown. Come here. Trumptown. Squeeze in tight. Squeeze in tight. You're going to be
on
TV.
Drink the Kool-Aid.
Come in here. You know, forget about those bandanas. We got to get some nice pictures. You don't need the mask. You don't have to worry about it. It's over because I said so. He thinks he can talk to the virus. He thinks that if he says, it's all done, go away, it'll leave. or no, disappear. Not even go away. Disappear. He said it will be gone.
Oh, it's going to vanish.
It will be gone from the world. And it might pop up, and there'll be a little brush fire, a little spark here and a little spark there, and we're going to stomp them out, quote, unquote. You know, he's probably going to use a rake, you know, just like the forest fires, you know, just rake the ground a little bit, and the virus will be gone. So in any event, that is his plan. His plan is to have a rally. His plan is to tell the virus it doesn't exist because it's invisible and you can't see it anyway, even though there's all these pictures. And he's going to tell his followers, come on down. I got this snake oil to sell, and I'm giving away free samples. Come on in. Get up close. I got something to tell you. You're going to want to hear this, and you want to taste this Kool-Aid.
and all that cheering and applause will just refill his tanks.
That is his plan. They are going to proclaim the virus gone. The recommendations for the distancing ends in 5 minutes. 5 minutes, it is going to be May 1st.
He's already canceled the federal guidelines for distancing.
He is not extending it. They expire in 5 minutes. They are not being renewed.
The virus better pay damn close attention.
They're not being extended. It's not the virus. It's his followers. They don't have to maintain the 6 feet.
No.
In 5 minutes. After that, the federal requirements are null and void. They are expired. And so he thinks he can make this proclamation and that his followers are going to come to these rallies. They're going to disregard. I mean, the governors could probably send in police and disperse the rallies because they're all in violations of the state regulations as far as maintaining social distancing. But in any event, his plan is to have the rallies. His plan is not to have social distancing. His plan is to say the virus is gone because he said so. And his plan is to get as far away from any scientist or any advice on what the status of the virus is, and the fact that these states are reporting 2,000 dead per day, and they don't really have their test kits as being not a problem.
Understand, May, we've got another 60,000 dead. They're already sick. They're going to die. West Point cadets are being called back. They're returning so Trump can have a huge audience to give a commencement address to. Many of these, up to 60% of the cadets are going to, they're infected. They're going to be bringing coronavirus back to the commencement.
And they're going to West Point. Where's West Point located?
This is incredible. It truly is.
Yeah, he's gonna bring him to New York.
Absolutely.
Just outside of New York City in West Point, where it's overrun with virus, even though it's gone down a little bit. It's still overrun with virus. He says, come on down. Because I want to see you throw your hats up in the air and give me a round of applause.
Viral-laden hats thrown in the air.
Right. Yeah, you could take. You see how many viruses you can catch by throwing your hat in the air. Just pick it up and bring it back home. It's a souvenir.
Oh, my God. This can't be real, but
from
it
New
is.
York.
This is organized genocide, these rallies and this commencement. 60% of them are going to be infected. By the time those who are there leave, it'll probably be 80% or more. And even if he puts a chair 3 feet apart, it doesn't matter. He's got to hear the roar of the crowd. He's got to hear it.
It's a 1918 Philadelphia rerun. This is directed by Donald J. Trump with a cast of thousands. It'll be epic. So anyway, that's his plan.
It's astonishing. It really is. And Jerry Kushner tells us everything will be pretty much back to normal in just 4 weeks after another 60,000 have died. They're going to stop dying on June 1st, apparently, according to Jerry. It's just incredible.
Just like the virus. Well, that'll be a month after the virus has disappeared. They shouldn't stop.
That's right. Well, it's got to disappear pretty quick, I guess, huh? Yeah.
It's got one more minute.
Oh, that's it.
1 minute, it'll be gone.
1 minute to midnight, and it's gone.
Right.
This is the mentality that's leading this country. All right? Defies actual conversational description.
It's not a problem. All you got to do is a little shot of Lysol, and it'll be all good.
Drink. Just take a shot glass. One shot glass of Lysol, and you're protected. Good God. Over 700 Iranians died from drinking methanol, thinking that was going to protect them. They might have got that on a translation from the Donald.
Lysol
too.
Inhalers, that's the trick.
Oh, no. Oh, Henry, we'll see. We'll be back. It's going to be grim, but we'll be here to cover it for you. Thank you very much. Talk to you tomorrow night.
Huh? See you tomorrow. Yeah. Okay, take care.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Unbelievable. Truly unbelievable. Okay, back tomorrow. Thanks for being here. Talk to you then.